coming up on today's Compassion Radio.
Well, what I've tried to teach my kids, who are both in college, and discourse is really loud there, they come home and say, what do I say to these people? What I try to tell them is, let them tell you their story. Look at them as an individual, not as a member of a large group. Look at them as a person with a brain of their own, with a heart of their own, with a story of their own, with a journey of their own. Then ask them, what is it that brought you to the anger that you're in? You may hear a story that will surprise you.
Hello, friends. Well, has it been a full week for you? Or just full of things that weigh you down? Sometimes just waiting or waiting things out can be a load of its own. Well, we're with you. On a personal level, we're navigating the season of waiting one step at a time, just like you are. And we're praying for you along the way as well. If you're one of those essential people that's working hard right now to solve some tough problems that we all face, I just want to add my heartfelt thank you. May God Himself continue to strengthen you and bring you much joy along the path. Maybe your frontline action is prayer, and you're committed to it as a lifestyle. Likewise, you're absolutely essential in this day and age, and we thank you for your faithful commitment to service and spiritual warfare. As we end this week, I've asked back our guest from earlier programs, Tony Ridgeway, for one more conversation. It was sparked by questions that came up in our earlier discussions. You know, I'm always curious about how God is moving in hearts, minds, and lives. Often we let great authors and thought leaders share their hearts with our Compassion Radio family. Well, since Toni herself works in publishing and interacts with faith leaders from all over the faith spectrum, she's got a unique perspective on leadership in the church today. No, I'm not digging for dirt here. And what Toni actually has to share about the state of the church and its leaders is really quite encouraging, as you'll hear today. By the way, the rest of Tony's personal story is powerful and timely. If you didn't catch our earlier programs, they're all available online in our archive, and you can find us on all your favorite podcast providers as well. I encourage you to listen in and subscribe on the platform that suits you best. Just look for Compassion Radio. And since you're right here today, thanks for tuning our way. Tony, welcome back to Compassion Radio.
Thank you very much.
On the previous programs, we talked about your personal testimony and how that shaped everything in your life. But you also, along the way, had lots to say about how other people are shaping the spiritual development of others because you're an editor of Christian publications. An interesting question I had not thought of when you and I first started talking about emotional and mental health during times of great trauma like we're experiencing as a world in this pandemic. Because of your work, you spent many years as a professional editor, actually seeing the thoughts of writers and people trying to communicate well as an editor, helping them communicate well.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a chance to see an awful lot of what's coming through the hearts and minds of Christian thought leaders around the world, including pastors who write sermons or theologians writing books or people writing devotionals.
Yes, that's right.
Tell me about what you've been seeing in the past few years that encourages you or concerns you about the state of the Christian mind these days.
I think I'm encouraged for the most part. I think that the state of the Christian devotionals and Christian articles and a lot of the writing that's going on right now is as it should be. It's trying hard to bring the truth of God and the love of God to people of many, many different walks of life. And that is what's really difficult about it, is that there are so many people to write for, and the way they see the world is very, very different than other groups of people. But because of the internet and because of articles, they have very, very wide audiences. And the audiences are loaded with people who think in a wide variety of ways. And so to make them all happy is almost impossible.
Well, of course, you're not trying to write one thing for toddlers and mean something to someone who's a widower.
No, because it doesn't work that way anymore. What I mean is even people of the same age can think very differently about the same subject. If you're trying to write for one age, you're going to hit both of those people.
Yeah.
And this whole idea of commenting on internet articles and on posts and things like that, that has gotten, you know, where people can say whatever they like and have, you know, no accountability whatsoever.
Which is killing real discourse.
That's what really kills a lot of authors. I talk to a lot of authors and pastors, and they're not accustomed to to people not taking responsibility for what they say.
Right.
And it hurts them. It hurts them to the point where they don't want to write anymore. And so you're right. It's damaging to helpful discourse if nobody takes responsibility for what they say. You know, they take criticism and they throw it out there and then leave.
Right.
And then don't want to stay for the response. It can really do some damage. The Christian authors want the discourse, but they're not getting it. They're only getting the one side.
At least not respectful discourse. And we probably have lost that because we're not teaching it well. I've talked with my kids before about the thing that's missing in modern education is ethics, which is how do we agree on a certain framework or set of rules by which we will live and interact with each other so that we can agree that this is the normal and acceptable way to talk with each other. If we can't even agree on those things, or people seem to exempt themselves from courtesy, we lose all faith in the ability for human beings to actually think thoughts, to share thoughts, to change their minds on things, to find common cause, or to join together in useful pursuits. And the church, the body of Christ, is a body of election. We choose in some ways to be part of it. God chooses us as well. He adopts us into his family. And once there, we have to figure out how to live together. So even within the church, people who say they're called out by God to something that's out of this world, we have a hard time in this generation finding a way to talk to each other with any kind of courtesy or love. If the word is true, and it says they will know us by our love, if there is no love here, the world will not know us.
True. Many, many, many authors right now are writing on that very subject. You know, the love needs to come from us because it's not coming from anywhere else. The important diction of love is our responsibility as believers. It isn't really going to come from anyone else, anywhere else, because the only people who really know love are people who know God.
You'd hope.
Yes. We are the ones best equipped to speak in love.
If we're willing to equip ourselves, and let him equip us. And that's my biggest fear, Tony, is that people are not allowing God to equip us with love. We want to be right. We want to have our voice heard. We want to be respected for what we say and how we say it. And if we're not respected, we're going to show you how much we don't respect their disrespect.
Yeah.
That seems to be the way within the church right now. I'm hearing it from pulpits. I'm hearing pastors say, defy civil authorities. Pastors are saying that to their congregations in the media. All kinds of things during this time of compression where all of our emotions are kind of being slammed together in smaller and smaller spaces, we feel. We've talked about the pressure of the pandemic and economics and politics on us right now being kind of a perfect storm. And it's leading young people away from trust and hope that their leaders and their parents, their elders would be able to guide them well because they can see it. They can read the tea leaves. Their parents, their elders, their political leaders don't know how to keep things together. Why should we? So those pressures are on us as a society and within the Christian culture as well. But to those who actually are doing the writing, are you finding that the balance of what you're reading for people that are committing themselves to paper to say, this is worth saving for posterity? Are they writing good stuff? Are they staying at the heart of God? Or is there a lot of weird stuff coming out now?
I guess I could use an explanation of what you mean by weird stuff. One thing that I've learned from working with authors is they all believe that what they say is the most important thing.
Or they wouldn't bother writing it down.
Or they wouldn't bother writing it down. And so speaking to them about changing them and about twisting them into something that will be understood by the reader is something that you need to have a little finesse with.
Yes, you do. Egos are involved here.
As an editor, you have to be careful because, you know, this is an art form of theirs that came from their heart, something they believe very seriously. And if you go and tell them that this isn't going to work with this audience, they're going to get upset with you because you're condemning something. You're condemning their heart at that point. You're condemning their soul. And it's like, no, I'm condemning your writing. It's not the same thing.
I guess what I mean by weird stuff is that there's so much untruth when we start justifying our own anti-Christ attitudes towards things. And there's plenty of self-justification in this generation for anger and for hatred even.
Yeah.
Of others and against others in ways that Christ adamantly and specifically and vociferously opposed in his teaching, in his words, in his actions. The only people he ever got flaming hot mad at were the religious Puritans, the ones that absolutely thought they owned the right to tell other people what to do. He really had a problem with that. but those are the only people that he ever overturned tables or took a whip to. Mm-hmm. Everybody else he took love to. I suppose that those he actually disciplined with the end of his crop were the people that knew no other language of discipline than a crop. In that way, I would say even that was love, because it spoke the only language they could hear. And yet he was very, very tender with those who the rest of the world was condemning. Mm-hmm. Are the writers speaking to that kind of self-righteous indignation, or are they speaking and discovering again the God of all compassion? What kind of stuff are they writing about?
Right now, I see the people writing, interesting, the anger that you speak of, they're loud, the loud voices mm-hmm. that are promoting their own agendas and such. I see Christian writers seeing that and saying, that's wrong. Hmm. And I also see them angry at the fact that we're angry. And so it sort of perpetuates itself when you start getting upset at people that are upset. That's not a good way to stop them from being upset. The way to stop them from being upset is to, and this is the only thing that seems to be working, is to allow them the space to be upset, and then come to them with love, regardless of their anger, regardless of them being upset, and regardless of their behavior, regardless of the things they do wrong and the failures, is that we are known by our love no matter what. And that is what turns the heads of people who are angry, is that we are approaching them with love and with the hand of God, regardless of how you speak, regardless of what you want to be right and you want to be heard. And yes, I want to hear you because I love you, is the way that we should approach. What do you have to say? And then ask them, what's the story behind why you're so angry?
That's kind of a traditional look at the ins and the outs, though. We talk about the church itself being the place where love flourishes, and those on the outside as being the hate groups.
Well,
the church as itself would then step out.
Even in our churches, people are angry. Like you said, our pastors are angry.
Tony, you've talked about that as being something that's the church speaking to the world. But of course, we know that so much of the anger that really troubles us is directed at the church from the church, and it's ripping it apart. Friends, wherever you're starting from in your faith walk, your church culture, or your politics, I guarantee you one thing. The words of Jesus and his life still have the power to transform us into his likeness, and through that, change the entire world. It's not a question of whether he is willing to do the hard work. The question is whether we're willing to let him get on with it in our generation, in our churches, in our homes and hearts. The first century disciples didn't identify themselves as traditionalists, as evangelicals, as liberals, conservatives, or anything else that might be familiar to us today. Before they were even called Christians, they called themselves people of the way. What they meant was they were committed to emulating the passion and lifestyle of Jesus. They personally watched how he lived, how he spoke, how he prayed, and even how he died. And they watched how he brought life back in his glorified body and unleashed the power of the Holy Spirit in their lives. They believed it was possible to live like that because, one, they saw Jesus do it, and two, Jesus promised them that they could. Jesus is still inviting us to join the way, and he's still making a way for us to do just that. As a communications ministry with boots on the ground and friends in the field, we strive to follow Jesus in practical ways every day and to follow him to the places where he's doing his best work. You know, it's no surprise that when we do that, we also find that he's doing his good work in our own hearts and lives as well. Thank you for joining us in this work through your faithful prayers on our behalf and by your generous, even sacrificial giving to make it possible for us to do what we do and to go the places we go. It won't be all that long from now when he opens up the door of opportunity again to go and see anew what he's been up to around the world. And we need to be ready for it. For your generous gift to Compassion Radio this season, I'd love to send you a copy of the fresh translation of the Gospel of John that we've been highlighting on our Monday's Chasing the Word series. Just let us know you'd like a copy of this dynamic gospel when you call or write us today. Here's how. Our website, CompassionRadio.com, is certainly the easiest way to reach us. There you can make your gift, listen to all of our broadcasts, learn more about our projects and our history, and subscribe to our podcast on all major platforms. You can also call us at 1-800-868-2478 or write us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Lastly, you can text the word COMPASSION to 53445 to give through your phone right now. Thank you for standing with us and for God's kingdom around the world. Remember, there is no Compassion Radio unless you want there to be a Compassion Radio. God bless you for your kindness, faith, and generosity. And now, back to the interview. So much of the anger that really troubles us is directed at the church from the church, and it's ripping it apart. So speak to that.
The most knowledge authors and pastors that I know, the people that are the ones that really, really want to see God's word forward instead of their own, what they'll say is, yes, we're angry, but they'll speak to us more like, instead of a large group with a personality of its own, they see people as individuals, so each person is a world.
Yeah.
And that world includes a lot of backstory. A lot of things that we may not even know about. Oswald Chambers used to say, there's always one more thing you need to know before you judge someone.
Yeah.
That when someone is angry and someone is being upset, and even a pastor standing in a pulpit who's telling a group of people the way he feels, you know, there's a backstory to that. There's more to that than just what's being said. It is our job to reach into that backstory so that we can address the anger appropriately. If we don't, all we're doing is reacting to the feeling, and we're not going to stop them from being angry because we're not addressing the problem. We're addressing the symptom of the problem.
Yeah.
It's like giving someone an aspirin for a brain tumor. You know, you're not going to help the person at all if you don't stop and dig in and see what's going on here. What do we have to speak to here? And tends to be more effective for me to look at people as individuals and not groups.
Yeah.
Because groups have personalities of their own.
And not always so good.
Well, no, they don't. But it's hard to say, you know, groups don't have backstories. They have combined personalities.
Yeah.
When you speak to people, you know, when you say that somebody comes to salvation, you're talking about an individual.
Right.
An individual makes a choice to go to Jesus Christ and say, I give you my life. Run my life for me. I accept your forgiveness on the cross. That's an individual decision. And in the same way, that individual has a world that brought them to that point, has a whole story, journey behind them. And we have to find out what that journey is, or we're just going to speak to the anger. And we're just going to keep getting angrier and angrier. And that's what some of the pastors are talking about now, is that they're sick of being angry, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sick of being stuck in their homes, and they're sick of being isolated, just like we were talking about what this pandemic is doing to people's mental health.
Yeah.
It's doing it to them too. And when you hand someone a microphone and put them in a pulpit, all of that comes spilling out, sort of. It's very difficult to control after a year of doing this?
Yeah. And of course, the irony is you and I sit here in front of microphones and we're displaying all of this good knowledge across the United States of America. So I get it. I get that we are preaching to the choir here in some ways, and that we are not exempt from the kind of things that could lead us astray, even to become zealots for things that are going to alienate people rather than bring them back to Jesus and to his cross. So I don't want to be with those kind of preachers that demand loyalty to a certain position. I am here to say simply that, Tony, you and I have experience here, that we get it a bit because we're in it with you, but we're not trying to dictate to anybody how they must respond to their own hurts.
Oh, my heavens, no.
But you're right. We have individuals here that have experiences that can be heavy, or they feel like they're frustrated because they can't love the way they want to, because when they try to, they get shut down because they're of a different political persuasion to somebody else in their congregation, or something else is tearing them apart from the inside.
Yeah.
So my last thought is, help us here, Tony, to figure out how do we minister to those who are diametrically opposed to us, as we've seen in their Facebook feeds, in the way they think about politics, or the way they think about immigration, the way they think about COVID and rights versus responsibilities. How do we interact with these people in a way that does, in fact, show love and that brings people back to Jesus, not just to our position?
Well, what I've tried to teach my kids, who are both in college, and it's really loud, the discussions or discourse is really loud there, they come home and say, what do I say to these people who really think I'm wrong? My response to them has, you know, I haven't always been right. What I try to tell them is that let them tell you their story. Look at them as an individual, not as a member of a large group. Mm-hmm. Look at them as a person with a brain of their own, with a heart of their own, with a story of their own, with a journey of their own. And let them tell you their journey and then ask them why. What is it that brought you to the anger that you're in? There must be a story behind that.
Yeah.
Tell me what brought you to the anger. Why, you know, what is it that made you feel this way? You may hear a story that will surprise you.
Yeah.
And may bring your heart out and say, oh, you might respond with, oh my goodness, that story, I don't, you know, I can't believe that you went through that. That was horrible. Yeah, I can totally understand where you could get your perspective. Is there anything else that seeps in? What else have you seen that promotes this idea? You know, be inquisitive. Ask more questions than give answers with people. And seeing what happens when they start to calm down, when you're interested in what they have to say.
Yeah.
Because they're a person, and because they matter, that you're interested in their point of view. You don't have to agree with someone's point of view in order to show interest and love in them.
Yeah. And that starts with us inside the church. I mean, it's a good word. I mean, it's very simple, and it is actually formulaic. If you do these things are possible. That doesn't mean that because it's a simple process that it's easy or that we are well-versed in how to exercise it, but we need to start. I mean, as Jesus says, be peacemakers. If you want to be happy, be one. It doesn't say that here is the five steps that will always work. You're not always going to make peace. But if you are a peacemaker, you're in the practice of making peace.
That's how you begin. You're right. And then you can move along the path as you see it. You know, do the next thing that God shows you. You don't have to do the fourth thing in the row. Just do the next thing that God shows you.
Yeah.
And then after that, God will show you something else to do or say.
Amen.
And then do that. You know, try to stay in the moment rather than trying to predict what they're going to say before they say it. And you allow God to control the conversation.
Yeah. When you say that, a lot of people hear that as something that says, oh, well, don't think any of your own thoughts. Just let God thoughts pour out of you. You have no say in this. That's not what you're saying.
Well, I'll be the last person to think that, you know, God created this body for a purpose. He has things in it that work certain ways because He is about how they work. It's your job to work with Him, with your body. Believe me, I'm the number one person to say that.
Yeah.
He's not the one in control. You're in control with Him, and He asks you to be in control with Him.
And if you haven't heard the rest of Toni's story, please go back and listen to the podcast in the past few days about her journey and the things that God has brought her through and is bringing her through in order to bring glory to Himself and healing to the world and joy to her family along the way, too. It's a great story. Toni, thank you so much for sharing with us these past few days. I hope you'll have a chance to sit with us again. Maybe we'll just sit around and spout off a bunch of great little proverbs all in a row about the great ways you can make life better. But obviously, there's great wisdom in you because of experience, and experience is one the hard way in most of our lives. I know life's been hard for you, but I thank you so much for being compassionate to those who also experience suffering. And we are praying for those people. Thank you so much for joining us on Compassion Radio.
No, it's no problem. Thank you very much for asking. I feel honored.
Flowing wounds sublime.
Know that we're in this ministry for you and because of you. Visit us at CompassionRadio.com. Call us at 1-800-868-2478 or write us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Remember, there is no Compassion Radio without your prayer and your consistent financial support. We'll see you tomorrow.